Welcome back to the Roundtable. The Free Theater at the Williamstown Theater Festival is celebrating their 25th anniversary. And what better way than to scare the zippers off you? The Valley of Fear, adapted by Steve Lawson from the Sherlock Holmes novel by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, directed by Lila Neugebauer. And it's a great pleasure to welcome both Steve Lawson and Lila to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. Great to be here.
So give us a sense, Steve, of how you adapted this and why you wanted to bring Sherlock Holmes to the Free Theater, and more importantly, outside.
Yes, well, I'm sort of a veteran of outside. Back in 1987, we had a grant, the theater had a grant to do an outdoor production to basically expand the audience to people who had never been to the main stage or even the Nikos stage, either because it seemed elite or expensive or just not for me. And so Nikos said, should we do a Shakespeare? And I, who am a very dates conscious guy, realized that happened to be the 100th anniversary year of the very first Conan Doyle story, A Study in Scarlet. So that's what we ended up doing. Alec Baldwin, a skinny 29-year-old playing Sherlock Holmes, and Tim Daly, looking great even then, you know what I mean, was the hero. And then that sort of became for the next few years a tradition of adapting a novel for the Free Theater. And then Shakespeare came along and so on. And I realized when Jenny and I were talking about possible projects for this summer that this was, in fact, the 25th anniversary year. And I said, well, we started with the first Sherlock Holmes novel. Why don't we, in honor of the silver anniversary, do the last Sherlock Holmes novel? And she thought that was made symmetrical, artistic sense, and that's why we're here.
So, Lila, give us a sense of what it is like, and realize that you're still in this process, but of what it's like to direct something in the out-of-doors.
It's a sticky, hot adventure on a day like today. It's a blast. I mean, I think there is... When you do theater outdoors, it is inevitably a kind of immersive communal ritual because we are all in the experience of the production together by virtue of the surroundings. And I think that this production, in its approach to realizing a number of settings which might not readily lend themselves to the outdoors, in locating those spaces outdoors, we are really relying on an immersive dynamic experience to communicate a sense of that world by incorporating the audience, moving through the audience. We're just trying to bring you into the experience and all be there on the field together.
I don't think there is a better name for a venue than Poker Flats.
I know. It's kind of wonderful, isn't it? We started out at another venue, Buxton School, years ago, and then we were at Mount Greylock High School for a while. And then, actually, it went indoors for a while because there were a couple years where the directors lost, I think, a third of the performances because of rain. You know, and Roger Rees said, oh, well, we can't do that. So we went indoors and it became more of a kid's show, like a Saturday morning. You know, it was fun because kids got to go to the theater for the first time. But when Jenny got back, she went, no, the Free Theaters is an outdoor, it's al fresco, it's Shakespearean, you know, kids and dogs and picnics and running around and, oh my God, whoa, and the actors are running through the audience and we're part of the show. And in this case, Sherlock and Watson consult the audience. They literally are confidants of the sleuths. So you feel invested in the plot of the story.
So you plan on that in the writing and the adapting of this, say, okay, I want the audience to be a very large role in this.
Absolutely. When the audience arrives, I'm not giving anything plot away here, they will have a code, which is the central subject of the first scene between Holmes and Watson. So they are sharing it with the detectives as they try to solve the first steps of this mystery. So you are part of the process. You are friends of Holmes and Watson.
And as you go through with the actors, I mean, you never really know. There's a lot of improv, I assume, in that kind of environment. But obviously, it has to be directed as well.
It does, unfortunately. yeah, I think Steve and I were just saying we've been blessed with two incredibly gifted, spontaneous, inventive, generative comic actors who we cast as Holmes and Watson, and they are veterans of the non-equity company here. So they are a gift to me in the fact that, yes, they are creating constantly. And when I collaborate with them, it's just sort of my job to pick.
So in that picking, you get to say, okay, this is what we want to do. And does that change night to night, or do you have it fairly set?
We're still in that joyous part of the process in which anything seems possible. we're turning the corner where inevitably we'll sort of have to choose our, we are choosing our choices. And I definitely think for the evening to move as dynamically and rigorously as it has to, it's actually going to be pretty carefully, it is carefully calibrated and configured so that it moves at a certain speed and moves through space in a certain kind of way.
Yeah, when Jenny first said, let's go ahead and do this back in February, the first thing I did in Holmesian fashion was to find out when sunset fell on the last night of the run. So we could calculate backwards as to when the curtain, as it were, time should be. So halfway through the spookier than the first second act, we bring in theatrical lighting into the occasion. And the first act is much darker and, not say grimmer, but it's more alarming than the first act. Because what's unusual about the Conan Doyle novels, except for Baskerville's, is that they're two-part. The first act, Holmes and Watson solved the case. Part two, we flash back to America years before, and we see where the crime originated. So it's fun because for like half a dozen of our actors, they get to play wacky Englishmen in the first act and alarming Americans in the second act. So, I mean, what young actor doesn't want to do that? I'm a totally different person. You know what I mean?
Oh, I thought you meant the alarming American part. Well, yeah. We all want to do that, too.
Yes, of course. Yes.
7 o'clock is the curtain time, so that is perfect. So then by 9 o'clock, it's dark and go to town.
The last 15 or 20 minutes is night. It is night, and it's appropriate because the plot becomes very night and very dark. And it's pretty exciting. I think it's going to be wonderful.
Of the things that you've done over the years in the free theater, and especially outdoors, has been very classic in nature most times?
I find it's funny. Maybe it's just I didn't know I had this predilection. Of the 8 adaptations I've done, 7 have been British. I didn't realize that until I counted them up. I also didn't realize that we were having a debate about guns and what you can fire legally in Massachusetts, and because it calls for a shotgun. This got very complicated. You can't just go buy a shotgun. It has to be sent from a gun shop to a gun shop, and you'll be certified to use. You can't just pick it up and take it in your car.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, no, I agree. I mean, who knows what characters are going to be in the audience? Son of Sam is coming to the show. But it's you know, but I suddenly realized looking back, and this I found out something about myself, that of the 8 adaptations I've done, 6 required guns. I thought, I don't know what this is saying about me, some homicidal gene in me, but I don't know. There you go.
And this is where the interview has taken a turn. But so when you look at the aspect of those things, and I guess we in the audience don't think about what goes behind the scenes of, you know, oh, I have to go get a permit for this.
Yes, and thankfully, I'm not actually the person who has to get the permit, okay. But we do. We need this, you know, it's Sherlock Holmes, so it calls for some real gags and for some, you know, some serious...
Yeah, it's the tone is important because... You're getting that Holmesian thing everyone loves of what solved the case, what did. But it's also you've also got to get the dark layer. So it's a combination of the melodrama, the chiller, the terrifying, with the wit and the comedy. It's a very delicate balancing act for the actors.
And again, you want the kids, you want the family. It says right on the poster, bring a picnic, bring the family, leave your firearm at home, and have a great time.
Yes. Just to go back to Study in Scarlet 25 years ago, I always remember this, maybe because it was the first one. I remember seeing these two little girls, I think they were Chinese or Thai. They clearly had never been to a play before. They were in the front row on the grass looking up, and when Tim Daly, the hero, died, his character, they burst into tears. Because clearly they were only TV. They'd never seen a live show, and we thought, isn't that what this is about? That in 20 years maybe they'll buy a ticket? Actually go see a play indoors, then maybe this is the beginning of a great audience development, which was the whole idea of the free theater starting.
It seems like it's an awful lot of fun to put something like on like this, but also, and I know you mentioned, you alluded to this earlier, that the weather, sure, is always a factor, but that almost must be kind of the fun of it, of operating without that net.
No question. It's like, you know, we're watching are the clouds coming in? Are there those clouds so it's cooler? Are those clouds, maybe we're about to have a tornado or something? And it's like, you know, okay, should the actors speak a little faster? And maybe, but no, you don't want to do that. You know, every night is different. It's fascinating. I have an outtake I'll have to find and show you sometime of Alec Baldwin in Study in Scarlet in a downpour, still acting, screaming his lines into the tempest in Victorian garb, and this stage manager in un-Victorian garb looks at the heavens and does a cutthroat, like, we're killing it. Because the audience was still in the field, like, begging them to go on. Which, is, I guess that's a tribute in itself.
But hard, and obviously another factor.
Oh, no question. And you know, I'd almost prefer like a sprinkle or a light rain, because the actors can work in that and the audience doesn't mind seeing that. It's when it's hideously hot. You know, I remember Tom Jones in 88, every night it was over 90 degrees in the entire run. And that was wool and leather and wigs and 18th century. And George Wendt, who was playing Squire Western, the joke was he was sweating off 5 pounds a night. And they weren't going to let him back on to play Norman Cheers because he wouldn't be fat enough, you know, like, you know, and he never complained. We called him St. George. You know, he was a true mensch.
And of course, in that never complaining, the actors know what they're getting into in this sense. And but I would think that that interplay with the audience would be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I mean, I think just to sort of piggyback on what Steve is talking about, I just think everything that we come to the theater for, the liveness, the engagement with a communal ritual, a direct, you know, presence in every sense is enhanced when you're outside. It just lives on a larger level there.
Come celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Free Theater at the Williamstown Theater Festival. It's The Valley of Fear, adapted by Steve Wasson from the Sherlock Holmes novel by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, directed by Lila Neugebauer. And Steve and Lila, I wish all the luck in the world. Thank you very much, and have a blast.
Thank you. We look forward to seeing you with your picnic.
Thanks so much.
Again, you can find out more information by going to wtfestival.org/free theater, wtfestival.org/free theater. It's The Valley of Fear at the Poker Flats Field, July 11th through the 14th and the 17th through the 20th at 7 p.m. wtfestival.org/free theater for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.